Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome in. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Pauly Howard. We're live in downtown Las Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. Very busy three-hour program lined up today. We're going to hit all the bases. We have Stanley Cup Game 2 of the final coming up tonight. We'll talk about that from a betting perspective. Full-blown Major League Baseball card with props, best bets, and how to attack the Belmont tomorrow, the third leg of the third jewel of the Triple Crown, I should say. College World Series games in action and a full card this weekend as well. French Open, ongoing match right now with Sinner and Djokovic. And we will begin with the NBA Finals and the craziness that took place, Pauly, yet again with the Indiana Pacers. I mean, it's getting to the point now where it's almost predictable, right? Not once, not twice, not three times, but four times he, meaning Tyrese Halliburton, and they, the Indiana Pacers, have done this. And it's rarefied air that we're talking about here. We can run down all the numbers, but at some point last night, I never bet it, but I actually broke out the app or multiple apps, and I said to myself, if the number's big enough right now, they're not out of this game, I have to make a bet on Indiana. And the number wasn't big enough, so I never bet it, and I guess I left money on the table there. But they did it again. Nobody should be surprised, although it was the Thunder. And I think you're almost lying if you answer this question the way that I think that a lot of people would, and I think that they're being inaccurate and almost lying about it. If I told you right now or asked you, when Tyrese Halliburton put the shot up close to the buzzer, did you think the ball was going in? If you said no, or if you say no to that, I think you're lying. Because I thought it was going in, and I wasn't surprised for 1 second when it went through the net.
Yep. The comeback cardiac kids, I've never seen anything like it. It's incredible. They led for 0.3 seconds. And to be there when they're down 15 or more in the playoffs, they're 5-3. Think about that.
Uh-huh.
Down 9 with 2:52. Teams were 0-121 going back in the finals. That down 7 plus with the last 3 minutes. You play a horrendous half of basketball and set the record for turnovers, you still win the game.
Yep.
You're down 9 with 2:52 against the best team with this insane power rating that could win 84 games. You still win. You're 8-1 in clutch games. You've won 7 of 8 on the road. How about forget about the futures. How about if you just decided to jump in the last couple weeks? 10-point dog last night, outright. 6.5-point dog in the Garden, outright. 4-point dog in the Garden, outright. 8.5 twice in Cleveland, 5.5 in Cleveland, outright. I mean, it's ridiculous that you're 7-1 straight up, and look at what these point spreads are.
The box score makes no sense after last night's game.
Absolutely
none.
Yeah.
Right? They tied the biggest fourth-quarter comeback final with a win in the last 50 years, and the 25 turnovers like you talked about, tied for the most since 1976 by a team that won a finals game. The 1976 Celtics did that, and they went on to win the title. And so, down 7 against the Bucks, 39 seconds left, they won. Game 2 against the Cavs, down 7, 47 seconds left, they won. Game 1 against the Knicks, down 8, 41 seconds left, won the game. And last night against a 68-win regular season team, down 9, 2:52 to go, and they won. If you take Micah Adams, who used to work at ESPN, had a tweet, and I thought he was actually being like sarcastic at first, but if he multiplied like the win probabilities. So basically, the chances of Indiana coming back in all four of those games and winning, he said, was 1 in 75 million.
Oh, God. Sure.
Every game is like 99.2% win probability or 98.1% for the other team.
Yeah. Yeah. OKC was 36-1 this year, up 15 or more at home. That big comeback you mentioned that tied the record, it was Dallas in 2011 against Miami. Who was the coach? Carlisle. Mm. There you go. I thought they had a big coaching edge going in, and it proved out in game one. Doesn't mean the series over, but they have to be loving life. They stole one. They didn't play well. I can't believe what Daigneault did. You're 80-18. Why are you going small ball?
Why did he change his starting lineup?
I don't understand. And Indiana to pound him on the boards? That might be the biggest upset.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, okay, you blew a lead. All right, that happened. Same thing happened in game one against Denver. You're up 9 with 2:50. You lose. 56-39 Indiana on the boards. And Holmgren plays 24 minutes and Hartenstein plays 17. What's that all about? What was he doing?
He's completely overthinking the room at this point, right? To tinker with the starting lineup and then to go small ball, especially late down the stretch. And, oh, by the way, like a guy like Lou Dort was having a ridiculous game, right? Offensively and defensively, that play that he made defensively late, as they said after the game, like that's an all-timer that they're going to put on the NBA Finals montage from here on out. I mean, if they win the series, yeah, you can bank on seeing that forever. Caruso was so good. Why was Dort not on the key guys for Indiana late in the game when they were making plays? Why was he not on Nembhard? Why was he not on Halliburton late in the final game? Why did they have Wallace on him? Like, these little things like that never made any sense to me. And the small ball again, when you're getting absolutely piss pounded on the boards.
Yep.
I will say that Chet was horrendous last night. It's one of the worst games I've ever seen him play.
Oh, he's terrible.
Now, this is not me talking. This is what people messaging me and texting me because they knew I had the Chet bet last night on the double-double and the win, and they lost. They said he's the most overrated player in the NBA. That's not me. I'm just the messenger here. I'm not going to go that far.
If there's a top three or top five, he's on the list.
You think he's that bad?
Yes. Yes, he is.
That overrated.
All the commercials, all the hype. Yeah, absolutely.
I will say this. So that whole thing that we talked about yesterday, and I thought JVT had he did. It was a great, brilliant write-up with all the numbers, right? Just based on what we've seen to this point, Oklahoma City's offensive numbers, when Chet's on the court by himself and there's no Hartenstein, they are elite. When it's both guys, they're not so great. It's like almost average. Last night, for one game anyway, I know who the better player was. It was Hartenstein, and it wasn't even close. And he only played the 17 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that whole angle of there might not be an angle here for Hartenstein in the series, which should make Holmgren shine, maybe it's the exact opposite. But the stuff that he did down the stretch was completely asinine when you're getting out-rebounded by 17 points, by the way, against a bad rebounding team, Paulie.
And they sat back trying to protect the lead as well and playing not to lose. SGA took too many shots.
Way too many shots.
You got to get others involved. It's also not efficient. 38 points on 30 shots. You get that game out of Dort and Caruso, you still lose. Indiana, 18 of 39 from three. Hello. This is going to continue. This is who they are. Number one three-point shooting team in the playoffs. And the lead should have been much bigger than 12 at halftime with those 19 turnovers. And 25-7 for the game, and yet OKC was only up 12 at the half, and then 14 steals to one. Another huge play was the Turner Bank, which I don't even know if he could do that again. Sure. If I gave him 100 chances,
I know it.
To kiss it in from that angle. But they make all the plays down the stretch, as they always do. OKC gags. They said, well, we've been here before, but how do you... I know it's been said by many people. Look at the point spread in game two. How many? Who wants to rush to and lay 11 with this team?
Well,
now?
I think people are, because I did see like 10 and a half, and that number's gone.
Well,
so
did
it turned into 11, 11 and a half.
Yeah, play similar fashion in the Denver series. They gagged away game one and then had an all-time performance in game two. But it's just people keep counting out and disrespecting this Indiana team, and they're not that good. Okay, well, you can bet against them when they're having the parade. I mean, that's just how they – a great coach, deadly from three, six guys in double figures – make all the key plays down the stretch, and you know who Halliburton's going to make the shot when it counts.
I will say they're probably not going to get that game again from Obi Toppin.
Oh, true. Good point. That's frustrating, right?
Right.
When you bet his props, nothing. When you don't, he goes off. But he was great.
So, and he carried the day for him. If he doesn't do that, they don't win the game. And he did, and he was awesome. I doubt he does it again. However, what if the angle here of the Pacers not turning the ball over 25 times in the game, specifically 19 times at half, what if that number cuts in half?
Right.
Or what if it goes down to like 16, 17?
It should.
Then what?
Mm-hmm.
And Oklahoma City is still leaving them open, and the threes are going in. Again, yeah. People just keep expecting that number to come back to the pack. You were screaming from the mountaintops going into the series yesterday, Paulie. They're a really good shooting team overall. They have a ton of guys who can go bombs away. And this is a team defensively that historically the numbers tell you they're unbelievable. But again, the problem is that they will allow the opposing offenses to get a ton of wide open looks from three.
Yeah.
And so I brought up on the air, should you not be surprised when Indiana misses, as you know, compared to the other idea? And that is, you keep being surprised when they go in. Well, that's who they are and what they do again. And those shots do fall. I thought Brian Windhorst was awesome. After the game on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, he said he was blown away after the game was done, because he talked to an Indiana coach before the game started. And the coach basically told Windhorst exactly how the game was going to play out. And they said, look, Oklahoma City is awesome. They're going to probably have the lead for a lot of this game. We're okay with that. Mm-hmm. We like playing in close games. We're better when we play from behind. And once we make a charge at them, they might be a little staggered, might not know what to do, and we feel ultra comfortable in that spot. And he said, all I can ask for, all we can ask for as a team is to have the ball in Halley's hands late with a chance to, you know, maybe win the game. And if we're there, we'll take it. And that's exactly what happened last night. And that, by the way, that's not an easy shot, and that's not a typical shot for him to take, although you have to check this out. Somebody on Twitter spliced together. Did you see this?
Yeah, strong.
They put together all 15 shots from Halliburton this year that either tied the game or took the lead in under 2 minutes. He went 13 of 15. It's on Twitter. I retweeted it at Mitch Moss Radio. 13 of 15, Paulie. Final 2 minutes to tie the game or put him up.
Big Culver's fan, too. Loves it.
Who's not?
That's right. Now what do you think? Adjusted series price, $290, $3. I saw as high as $330, as low as $275.
Thunder and five, right?
Yep. And then SGA is down to $280 for MVP. It's getting juicy now. That was excellent. And you didn't see it coming again. It just to come, and who knows? What'd you guys see? The highest I saw was 15 to 1. But I'm sure it was higher than that, down 9 with 3 minutes. But the highest I saw, like third quarter, early fourth quarter, was 15 to 1. And they do it again.
Here's the thing. Again, how were they not put away early in that game?
Should have been down 20 at halftime.
Easily. Minimum. And how was it a six-point game like in the fourth quarter?
That too. Yep. He's got a lot to think about. And I don't know what he's going to do with his lineup adjustments and the bigs either.
Up next, Game 2 Stanley Cup Final. Players were targeting in Major League Baseball. Opposing pitchers are currently on a 15-1 overrun with their K-prop against this team. Yeah, Paul, I'm looking at the screen right now. Almost 11 for Game 2. Oklahoma City favored by most books anyway. 10.5 at BetMGM. Total between 227.5 and 228.5. That Game 1 number got as high as 231.5 during the week. Stayed under. Really never threatened to go over that number. Would you look at coming back? It's only been adjusted now by about 2 points. Would you play the under in that spot again?
No. It exploded late. So I think you could see an over in Game 2. Might make some adjustments and got up to a slow start. Looked like guys were nervous and the stage was too big early on. A lot of guys struggled shooting the ball early.
Certainly. Tonight, Game 2 Stanley Cup Final. I'll throw some saves props at you for tonight. Bob is 25.5 pretty much across the board for Florida.
Everyone was right in Game 1. Go over. Right. That's right.
Does that continue tonight?
I think they're averaging 31 a game. Last 15, so I would say over again. Yep, I don't know if you want to go with Skinner, though, over, because of what the domination and what happened in the third period. Shots on goal, 14-2, in favor of Edmonton and what they did. So that'd be risky. But you want to go over, Bob? I'm on board. And seven of the last
for the record, Skinner's 24.5.
Okay, yeah, seven of the last eight head-to-head have gone over. Edmonton 13-1, last 14 is a home favorite, and Florida has the record, 51 road playoff goals and 3-plus goals on the road, 9 in a row, both records. So we'll see if they can add another over here after you got there in Game 1. I can't find time on ice props. That's big, too, as Eddie Olczyk talked about, because you get that extra day off now. Game 3 is Monday, so empty the chamber. Let all these guys go out there and play. Give them extra ice time, although that's not available. Jonathan Davis with a great prop up at VSiN.com. Ekholm over 1.5 block shots. He has blocked 2 shots or more in 8 straight against Florida. So that's a good breakdown, what he had in analysis up there today as well. We'll see if Edmonton can keep it going. What do you think, man? It's a tough one tonight.
I think it's going to be a very difficult series, game by game.
Yeah.
I think it's going to play out where it is going to be a 6 or 7 game series. I really do. I think these two teams... And, you know, nothing changed my mind after Game 1. I thought going in super even, should have been a coin flip. I thought there was maybe some money, some value on Florida there because the money shifted in the Oilers' direction before, you know, Game 1 started, and they got as high as plus 115 on the series price. I thought that was a pretty good number to take on Florida, even as low as like plus 110. Let me ask you this. He's the hottest goal scorer right now on planet Earth. He had two more in game one. Should Sam Bennett be plus 230 to score a goal tonight?
Yeah, good price.
When you look at Draisaitl is plus 115. I saw one spot that had even money on Draisaitl today, but yet they're offering plus 230 on Bennett. Like, they're going to score goals in this series, I think, pretty much in every game. I'd be actually a little surprised if Skinner does, you know, shut them out ever. They're just too good, and they can, you know, come at you in waves. And Bennett at plus 230, and he leads all of, you know, every skater in the playoffs with goals already. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The assist prop, Draisaitl, is as high as minus 175. McDavid is, oh, you can't find one. I couldn't anyway. It was 1.5 over. It was plus 170 on him. Are you going to do another shots on goal parlay tonight?
Yeah, the guy who got me was Kane, but they threw some guys out at William Hill and changed it around. So probably just put one together myself.
Bouchard at 7 in game one.
That could happen again, right? I'm sure that everyone, if you didn't have Kane, everyone cashed those tickets. So if you can put your one together or do with a quick pick what they're offered at other spots, you can put that together as well. There could be a lot of shots on goal. DraftKings has added shots on goal in the first 2 minutes. Edmonton's $1.60 have a shot on goal. Florida's $1.45. That's not bad. Corey Perry to have a point is even money.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. And again, Edmonton can tie the record. 20 different Edmonton players have scored in the playoffs after what Ekholm did. So the record's 21. They have 20. The depth, so many guys come at you. And the resilient group find a way to win. Although I give them the edge in game two based on what happened in game one and how it ended. I thought that was total crap. What happened with the goalie interference, and then that's two goals right there. Because it shouldn't have been a goal, and then you get the power play. Marchand scores, there's two. Shut him down pretty much the rest of the game. What happened in the third period, so we'll see if that carries over tonight and how great Edmonton has been defensively.
If Edmonton, if they're going to continue this hot streak with all these shots on goal, right, they're going to be coming at you again from every direction and from other guys not named McDavid and from Draisaitl. Wallman had 5 in game one. It's 1.5 tonight, minus 148.
Whoa.
Bouchard, like I mentioned, had 7. 2.5 there over is plus 110. Perry had 2 in game one. His is 1.5 tonight over is minus 120. On the flip side for Florida, Marchand had 3 in game one. You know about this guy. Obviously, he is like a super clutch Stanley Cup and a playoff player, has been his whole career. He's 1.5 tonight, minus 130. Marchand just has to get 2 shots on goal. How about Verhaeghe had 0 in game one?
Yeah.
That was a surprise.
Yeah. But I'm the one they offered for game one was Tkachuk, Bennett, I think it was McDavid, and a couple other guys, and then the loser was Kane. That was 42-1.
Have you bet the game at all?
I got that. No. I'll do something in play. See what happens early on.
Let me give you, I'm looking at this tonight in Major League Baseball. Here's what I was talking about before the break. There is a team in Major League Baseball where the opposing starting pitcher is on a 15-1 overrun with their K-prop. Pretty strong.
Yeah.
I wish I would have found out about this a week or so ago. Regardless, here we are. It's the Rangers at the Nationals, and Corbin takes on Soraka. Which team do you think it is?
Texas.
It is. Pitchers are 15-1 last 16 starts over their K-prop against the Rangers.
Oh, man.
This started on May 18th when Framber Valdez struck out 8. Valdez, great again last night. You had the Astros. Good job there. The Rangers' K-rate since that date, here's the key, is 27.7%. That is the highest in Major League Baseball. It's 25.5% against righties since that date. Third highest in Major League Baseball. Soraka's prop tonight, 4.5, but it is juiced over tonight. If you want to keep riding that streak, there you go. I have not bet it yet because I hate jumping in late to these streaks. And this is a great tweet from Dave on the same game. You can always tweet the show at VSIN Live and Mitch Moss Radio at Paulie Howard. Dave says, take a look at the Nats Rangers Nerfie. Seems counterintuitive with Corbin going, but he's 9-1 to the Nerfie. And Soraka is 6-0 to the Nerfie. 50% ground ball pitcher. Rangers are a dead red Nerfie team. The counter is it's a hot day in the nation's capital. But you have two really, really good Nerfy pitchers, and that includes the guy who, you know, people have loved to fade for the last 3 years, Patrick Corbin.
Very good.
And here's one more for you tonight, quickly. Orioles at the A's. Sears is going. Is tonight the night for Sears?
Yeah, he's going.
Yeah, okay.
That's who I have.
1.88 home runs per 9. 13 overall in the year. Very bad or friendly conditions tonight in Sacramento. 80-degree temps. Winds are blowing out yet again. Baltimore only has 6 home runs against lefties on the year. However, again, with those good conditions, Paulie, one guy we've talked about for several days now in a row on the show, Ryan O'Hearn, 333 against lefties. Maybe a night for Adley Rutschman to continue here as well. I think it might be a positive matchup for him taking on Sears tonight. And, you know, who's going to be surprised if we get more runs scored in Sacramento during a night game?
Mm-hmm. Don't mind that. And the Cardinals look too easy tonight as well. Dodgers called a kid up to make the start tonight because of all the injuries, and he has to go. Sonny Gray's got great numbers going back, although he has issues against the Dodgers. But 4 times he's gone 6 innings and hasn't allowed a run. He's cheap tonight at home. And if you want to do props, Freddie Freeman has the highest OPS of an opposing player in that ballpark's history in 39 games.
Yeah, that's
what he's done.
So I had this game circled as well. In 2 of his last 3 games, Gray has been awesome. Double-digit Ks in 2 out of those games. And a combined 0 earned runs allowed. That was against Texas and against Detroit. Detroit's offense, very good. Shut him down.
Uh-huh.
Does that continue tonight now that he faces the Dodgers lineup?
Yeah. I'm going to take them. But if the Dodgers get me, that's okay. But I think Gray and the Cardinals will win. And I think the Brewers will win again, too.
I bet
they're hot. They've won 9 of 10. And Yelich is hitting .430 in his last 11 games.
I have several bets on that game.
But that, yes. He has been smoking hot.
A lot
of good numbers today.
Yeah. I feel good. Like today, you know, these when you get on in these streaks that are early and you keep riding them, like today again, that Caminero for Tampa. Early game, raising the Marlins. We've been preaching, like, maybe just take a peek at his over total bases, plus money again today. Guess what? 2 doubles. I think in his first 2 at-bats, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
But he's one of the guys. Chirio's been hot for the Brewers. Yelich has been hot for the Brewers. And we'll run on a whole list of other guys a little bit later on in the show as well.
Yeah. Well, and you also said Rutschman, too. Henderson owns Sears, too. Henderson's hitting .556 against him. So that's another guy if you want to do props with Baltimore.
Okay. There we go. I like it.
Houston was easy. Can't believe that price. But do you want to play?
Luckily, they got the game in.
Yeah, too. Well, that's the angle today. I mean, what time did they get in last night? That was a 3-hour rain delay.
Yeah, sure.
So they probably got in at 6-7 in the morning. And you got to play again today.
Yeah, all right. So follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We will hit the third jewel of the Triple Crown up next. Jeff Siegel's going to join the program. We'll get his plan of attack for betting the Belmont in what appears to be a very loaded field. Does he agree with that? We'll ask him coming up here on VSiN. What a busy time in sports. And on top of everything else we've talked about in the first 30 minutes so far today, we get the Belmont tomorrow. And legendary horse racing analyst Jeff Siegel joins the program now. JeffSiegelRacing.com, and he is on the Progressive Guest Line. Jeff, it's a pleasure to talk to you as always, my friend. Thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me. They're running today at Saratoga on Friday with rain, so we don't know what kind of track we'll be dealing with tomorrow. I think it's supposed to rain again tomorrow, so that's part of the monkey wrench we have to deal with in trying to handicap the Belmont. But it's a great race, and hopefully everybody will show up and run their race.
I'm glad that you said that, because to me, when you look at the field, and it's only 8 horses, obviously, for the running this year, it feels though, when you look at the horses that are in it, Jeff, and you're talking about journalism and sovereignty, and then Baeza as well, you throw in Rodriguez and the other 4 horses as well, the Derby and the Preakness winner, I think that this year the Belmont would stack up to most years previously here. Is that a fair statement?
Oh yeah, I mean they've got the best colts in the crop in this race. You don't always get that. Sometimes the Preakness winner doesn't come back, or the Derby winner doesn't come back if he doesn't win the Preakness. But you've got the Derby and the Preakness winner here, and a couple of other new shooters that make it a tough race. So this is an unusually strong Belmont. I think part of that is the fact that I think people like to go to Saratoga, and that's where it's going to be staged as they rebuild Belmont for another year. And then, of course, you've got the shortened trip to 1.25 miles, which they can't run mile and a half at Saratoga, so they have to run a mile and a quarter. And I think some of these horses might not be in the race if it were the traditional distance. So it all comes together with a terrific race, and I think whoever can win it will be the leader in the division going into the second half of the year.
I'm on the edge of my seat here. You're going to make the case for a long shot. You have the floor. Take it away. Fire.
Well, I'm not. I don't know if you could qualify this horse as a long shot, because he is 6-1 in the morning line. But at least he's not one of the first three favorites, so I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Rodriguez. This is a Bob Baffert trained colt who missed the Derby because he had a quarter crack on a hind leg. He couldn't train him, and he missed that race. But since then, he's really trained, really like a top-class colt. But more importantly than that, or just as important, is the fact that he is going to get a front-running trip that he loves. There's not a lot of speed in the race, and he's got it. He will be the controlling speed. He's 2-for-2 whenever he's able to make the running. He did that in the Wood Memorial in his last start, did it easily. He's fast on speed figures. Again, I've watched him train at Santa Anita, and he's training unbelievably well. And if they don't respect him, if they leave him alone, and I think that's what's going to happen, I think Rodriguez has a very good chance to make the lead and just keep on rolling. I think he can keep going, especially if the track is wet. Now, he's never run over a wet track, but traditionally a wet track can favor the speed. They're kicking that slop back to everybody else, and he's out there by himself. So I think it could work out really well. Mike Money Smith is the rider who knows him very well. Obviously, Bob Baffert knows how to win classic races. So at 6-1, to me, there is a very good gamble available here on number 3, Rodriguez.
Okay, so you're going to bet him to win it outright. How are you going to play some of the exotics then? What do you want to tag him with?
Well, I think journalism is really good, and it wouldn't shock me if journalism wore him down. That's how good I think journalism is. I thought he was the best colt in the crop way back when I saw him win at Del Mar back in November. He was my pick in the Kentucky Derby. He ran his race. He got beat, but the fast pace, the off track may have conspired. Maybe he moved too soon. I don't know. Came back and won that remarkable race in the Preakness. He's had 3 weeks off now, and he's a fresh horse. I think journalism is absolutely going to run his race, and if it's better than Rodriguez, then he'll beat him. But if not, if Rodriguez can get loose, then maybe journalism can complete the exacta. I'm not that high on the Derby winner here, Sovereignty. I think things went his way, which is one of the reasons why I think he did not run back in the Preakness, because I think that Bill Mott and the people who owned him, the Godolphin people, they weren't convinced that by bringing him back in 2 weeks was going to be in his interest, and also the race shape would be different because they kind of fell down in front of him in the Derby, and I think they felt that the Derby, the Preakness pace would be different. So, but he's a mile and a quarter horse. We know that. I wouldn't be surprised if he came on in late and got a piece of it. But to me, the gamble to me is Rodriguez over journalism. That's what I will do.
Okay, excellent. At your intro there, you mentioned that you have the Derby and the Preakness winners both running here, which is rare. But going back, it's been numerous times that the Derby winner has skipped the Preakness. What do you think about people saying we should tinker with the schedule as a result of that?
I don't think it's necessary. I mean, Sovereignty could have run. I don't think they ran not because necessarily because it was back in 2 weeks. I think they wanted to bask in their glory for a little bit more than 2 weeks because I don't think they thought they could win the Preakness. But, that's Godolphin. They don't maybe look at things like we would in the States. So I think it's fine. I mean, it's supposed to be tough. It is tough. We've had two Triple Crown winners in the last 10 years, so it can be done. Mm-hmm. If you want to do it, you can try it. And I personally think they should just leave it alone.
Let's follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, longtime horse racing analyst and better, Jeff Siegel. He's on the Progressive Guest Line. I've heard a lot of people make the case for Baeza, 4-1 on the morning line. What are your thoughts on that?
I like him, but I think maybe people are going overboard on him. He was a closing third in the Derby. Everybody saw his last 16th of a mile when he seemed to be finishing well. But it was a meltdown in that race. Everybody closed. I mean, the winner came from you know, way, way back. The runner-up was way back. The fourth-place finisher was way back. I mean, Baez wasn't doing anything that three or four of the horses didn't do in the same race. He's already run against Rodriguez once and finished second at Santa Anita, so it's not like he's got some kind of major edge over Rodriguez. And I mean, if Baez continues to improve, I could see it. But I think, and he's getting a lot of early action on the tote as we look at the prices now. I think he's overhyped a little bit.
Okay.
We'll see, you know. I mean, I know a lot of sharp guys that I know like him, so I could be wrong. But I'd want to see more evidence that he can stay close to a slower pace and then make that move than he did in the Derby when he almost had to close by default.
Very good. Love talking to you, Jeff. If you had to make a price on Del Mar versus Saratoga, what would you set it at?
Well, I have been to Saratoga since 1989, so I have to kind of, you know, jog my memory a little bit. I like Del Mar because I can drive down there. So I want to go with Del Mar, you know. But I understand the racing is better at Saratoga, so if you're going to go by that, then, you know, I guess you have to give the edge to Saratoga.
Very good. You can follow Jeff on X at J Siegel Racing. Thank you, sir. Enjoy the races. Good luck, okay?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Get in on the action with our friends at First Bet, playing the free First Bet and VSiN Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. Enter your picks for Saturday's top races to win great prizes, up to a $500 wagering voucher from First Bet. Head over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. VSiN.com/Belmont. I'm showing Sears is off now, so forget that Rutschman Henderson stuff with the numbers against Sears. And Sinner just beat Joker in straight sets. He takes on Alcaraz Sunday in the final. DraftKings open Alcaraz $1.20. I'm surprised by that. Sinner hasn't lost a set.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah?
Ooh, yeah.
I'd like Sinner. Okay. And then Sabalenka's.
Well, guess what, buddy? Fire away.
And then Sabalenka's taking money now up to $2.20 in some spots tomorrow.
Right. That's
against
moved.
Coca.
Is that
Coca.
40 cents?
I saw 180, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Based on, yeah.
You know, I was looking last night before this whole thing, before the men's semi started today. If you parlayed all those favorites, two of them, very large, with Sinner and then with Alcaraz, tied it into Sabalenka. It was plus money. Oh, that's because Sabalenka obviously was, you know, minus 180, so you're going to get that with two other legs. But it was going to pay like around $1.18 or $1.19, something like that.
Yep. Good job, Tim McMahon, ESPN. Knicks want to talk to Jason Kidd. What do you think of that? Might have to work out a trade. Although they don't have a lot of picks because they gave up five to get Bridges. You have to work out a deal there, kind of like Doc Rivers.
I don't know, Paulie. You're going to go from Tom Thibodeau to Jason Kidd?
Yeah.
Does that feel like it's worth it to you?
What's the relationship? There was a good relationship with Kidd and Freak. It didn't translate to success on the court, but Freak liked them. So that's why those rumors are starting, too, with that stuff, too.
Oh, so they bring over Kidd and then
they
can rekindle the fire that they once had in Milwaukee?
And try to make a big offer to get Freak. And I thought this would happen. There was a mutiny in the locker room, according to reports. The Stars fired DeBoer today after what he did with Ottinger.
I would have bet a lot of money on that happening.
Yeah. He had 1 year left on his contract, too. Oh. 7 minutes into the game, he pulls his goalie. Seven games was a large sample size for him, he said. Mm-hmm.
Calls him out after the game as well.
Yes, right. Yeah, your franchise player and goalie.
I build an offer around Chet Holmgren, Cason Wallace, picks.
Yeah.
Maybe another player, and I call up Milwaukee and I say, what do you think?
If they lose?
No, even if they win? Even if they win.
You've seen enough.
No. I mean, I think both
He's
parties...
He's a frustrating guy. I mean, is he going to put on weight? Is that possible?
All right, win, lose next, and this is why you have to be feeling damn good today if you're Indiana.
Some Lose Some is sponsored by the Sharp Plays.
Were you a winner last night?
Wow, winning.
Or was it a rough one?
Well, they can't all be winners, can they?
Loser! You're a loser!
Paulie Howard recaps the night in sports betting in Win Some, Lose Some.
Check them out, sharpplays.com. Jeff's on in half an hour with some picks and some great stories. Pacers, 4-1 money line. In play, highest I saw, 15-1. You saw higher? Send it in. Let us know. incredible comeback again. 5-3 this year in the playoffs when they're down 15 or more. First basket, SGA plus 475. First three-pointer, Dort 5-1. Like you said at the top of the show, you get that kind of game out of Dort and Caruso, and they have 19 first-half turnovers, and you still lose the game? Tough. Most assists, dead heat. Nembhard 13-1, Williams 8-1. And this also opens the door for props if he's not going to play the bigs. What's going to happen with rebounds?
Well, he has to now. He's got to tinker. He's got to go back.
You think so?
You can't. That formula was terrible last night.
Well, Chet certainly was bad, too. Most threes, Dort plus 550, Toppin 25-1. Toppin to hit four threes or more, 15-1. Most rebounds, Nesmith 30-1. Incredible with the game leaders. Big tickets continue to cash. Subscribe, be part of the team. VSiN.com, our radio and podcast friends. You always want to see these tweets and videos. At Paulie Does Vegas on Instagram. Send it in. We'll put you on. Thanks to Duck, Tammy, Ann, Chris, Kent, and Mitch Moss sending this one in. This one's so popular. The dog loves the pool, and every day he waits, no matter the season. There's the snow. He just sits out about, when are you going to open the pool? I want to jump in. And he goes out there every day. How smart is this guy with his thoughts, right? And it's like, come on, open up already, right? He goes out in the snow. He goes out in the cold. And then finally, it's that time. The weather cooperates. Beautiful pool. Pool's open. He gets excited with his brother, right? And they're telling him, yes, it's time. You can go. And the excitement. And he just cannonballs right in there. I mean, if he goes out every day and sits right by the edge of the pool. Where
that's amazing. I mean, the first time I saw it, I was like, where is this going? Did he like lose a brother and he goes out to like the grave site like every single day in the backyard or what? It's like, no, it's a pool. And then the happiness just pours off the phone when you're looking at it over and over and over again.
Yeah, there it is. It's closing strong too with the look on his face as he jumps in. That is excellent.
That has, I saw it on Instagram today, by the way, popped up.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you how many like likes and also comments it has on it.
Oh, no doubt. Five different viewers have sent it to me to put it in. And always send them in, we'll put you on. That's one of the most popular ones. How great that is. Excellent. You got the dog waiting to be fed? These are always good, too. Look at this guy coming in. What's his dog? It's dinner. See, no, your dinner's at 5. It's 4:58. I feed you at 5. He goes, no, come on. Puts the nose on the bowl, flips it upside down, trying to signal to the owner, hey, human, fill this sucker. I'm ready to eat. No, picks it up, nothing. It's like the one guy who just grabbed the bowl in his mouth and threw it across the table.
Sure.
Remember that one?
It's a busy day. I burn a lot of calories here. I'm hungry. I need to eat 2 minutes before.
Yes. Nope. Got two more minutes. Sharp. He knows what time it is. Lose some. OKC was 36-1, up 15 or more at home this season. A couple bad beats. This happened while we're on the air. Mets 5-3 in the eighth. They blow it. Big throwing error in the eighth inning. Dodgers win 6-5. Rangers led 3-1 in the ninth, and they blow it. And the Rays win 4-3. And the Rays won 4-3 earlier today. They moved the game up because 65,000 people are going to Metallica tonight at Raymond James. So they had to play a day game.
I was wondering why they're going to play so early.
They're also playing Sunday there, too. Two nights, Metallica.
Oh, so they're having the no-repeat weekend is what they're doing.
They were concerned about all that traffic, so they moved the baseball game up as well. Before the line moves, Sharp Plays at sharpplays.com already there. They don't chase the market. They move it. Powered by cutting-edge AI, trusted insider sources, the Sharp Plays delivers the edge that serious bettors rely on. Free betting reports, real-time alerts, market-moving insights, all delivered right to you via email or X. Not some overnight startup. Documented track record since 2011. Receipts, logs, and results right there on the site. Sharpplays.com. Trusted by pros. Watched by the books. Check them out. Sharpplays.com. He's giving away a free subscription with us in half an hour.
Okay, so I'll give you this from last night. Toppin, again, played really well. 25 minutes, scored 17 points. And as you said, hit all those threes. He had 5 overall in the game, and that, you know, to hit 4+ paid a fortune. You're probably not going to get that game again out of him. That's like a fluke, I think, especially from downtown. Maybe the minutes, you know, maybe he'll have another big points game, but from downtown, I doubt it. Like McConnell was okay. He had 9 points, 1 rebound, 4 assists. That's typically what he does. But you didn't get much, if anything at all, out of Mathurin, and he played 15 minutes. Shepard hit the 1-3, so his prop went over. And then, you know, another bench player in Bryant, you know, what is he going to give you overall? He only scored 5 points last night. Not a single Pacers starter scored more than 20 points last night. Not one. They all scored double figures.
Balanced attack.
Right, but it was 19 points or below. Siakam led him.
That's a guy who's underrated. As much as we talk about Chet's a fraud and overrated, how good is Siakam? Guy's a champion, too.
I'm sure he is.
Got a ring in Toronto.
And then when you flip it, And first of all, another thing about Daigneault, why was this Mitchell kid on the court last night at all, ever playing in that game? Why was Wiggins is like mop-up duty. It's a blowout, get out, go out there and score. When they, you know, load management and six guys sit, he's going to go play 30 minutes against a bad team. He played 9 minutes, but you got unbelievable games from Lu Dort. That probably won't happen again. 17 points, and he hit a ton of threes in that game. Caruso was fantastic. He might give you that type of game again because he's that good. But we're talking offensively and defensively for both those guys. And you also forced 19 turnovers in the first half, 25 for the game, on your home court when you led the entire way but for 0.3 seconds, and you could not win the game?
Yeah.
And they're 11-point favorites now in game two?
Yeah. So they're saying, hey, we've been here before, and this would happen against Denver. Well, you went seven, though. You had to beat them in seven. You were down 12 at home in game five in late in the third quarter. So you've had some clunkers on the road. You're 0-6 ATS on the road. You got blown out in a couple games. You caught a break that the format is no longer 2-3-2. And then if those people have those big future tickets, now you can maneuver. Now you steal game one. And now what's the adjusted series prices at?
Now I'll flip it, though. So who's going to step up then when Dort and Caruso don't have those games? Jalen Williams, is he going to be the guy?
I don't trust him either.
I'd say he's a little unreliable.
He was 6 of 19.
Again, not efficient.
He was also afraid to shoot in the fourth quarter.
Sure he was. And I thought, I mean, all I could think about in that first half last night was SGA in the Seinfeld episode where Costanza's a chucker. I'm like,
I know. Did you hear that too? It was either a coach or an executive texted Windhorst during the game. It was like, is this guy going to take 40 shots? I mean, that's what we were headed.
That's what I thought, yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, feel free to pass it. But that was.
And I thought a lot of that was forced, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Like he was not trying to get others involved. And he did that against Minnesota. Like he was so good against Minnesota and he was so good all year long.
Well, it's also a whole different ball game if it's not a parade to the free throw line either.
Sure.
Free throw merchant.
But he got a lot of calls in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter. Couldn't win the game.
But they also did a great job by Carlisle. We're saying we're not going to let you do that. We're going to pack it in. We're not going to foul. We're not going to give you easy baskets. Knock it down a three or make these others knock down a shot. It was a great job.
And I have to admit, I'm a little bit concerned about Chet. And I thought for one game anyway, and I don't know how it's going to play out from moving forward from game two to however long the series is going to go. I thought it was quite easy to see last night that Hartenstein was better on the court. Chet was just, I don't know what the hell was going on there. But again, with how many minutes those two guys played overall, even though Chet played a terrible basketball game, he was only on the court for 23 minutes. Hartenstein played 17 minutes. That was it. Really weird. Daigneault, yeah. I mean, you pointed that out too.
Why would you mess with your formula, right?
You're
80-18.
That's right.
Make them adjust to you. I don't know why you're going small and.
You have all time numbers, all time. And yet you're going to be the one to tinker? I don't think so. That's like Floyd Mayweather changing his game when he's a $9 favorite against a boxer who has 11 losses.
Yeah. 56-39 on the boards. Incredible. So they're probably saying, we'll make adjustments. We'll fix this. We'll fix that. Indiana, you're loving life. They're not going to play any worse than that in the first half. You get panning them the ball. And they couldn't run them out?
No. Nope.
Brian Mahoney had a good tweet about that. Of all teams. Like this number one team in history in point differential and forcing turnovers, number one defense, and they're only up 12 at the half after the 19 turnovers. And then you still thought, okay, up 10, they're okay. And then next thing you know, we got a six-point game. And then the Turner kiss. And then a couple more stops. And then some easy baskets. And we got a game. And then more stops. And then, of course, Halliburton does what he does best and makes it at the end.
I will say that first half trend got there last night, right? Teams that are off a seven-day layoff and they have home court advantage in game one here, they're on average going back in like 26 games here in the finals. They're leading typically by 8-plus points per game. That was a good nugget there from VEASAN host Scott Seinberg, and that came in. They were up by 12. Again, should have been, that was like game one T-Wolves Thunder. Minnesota should have led by 15 points in that game.
Right. But in that series, though, Minnesota got great looks. This isn't Minnesota. Yeah. 18 of 39 from three. 40% in the playoffs. 46% last night. They're going to knock those down.
We will go to Edmonton and discuss game two of the Stanley Cup final up next. Derek Van Diest, NHL.com, joins the program. Does he anticipate a ton of shots on goal again tonight, both teams, and as a result, plenty of goals? We'll ask him coming up next here on VSiN.